This is The God Show, a conversation about the human spirit with your host, Pat McMahon.
You know, if Oprah was doing this show, she would probably be bragging all over the place about the books and the authors that she discovered. And I will tell you that the guest today is worth her time, certainly yours, and beyond my imagination, worth my time. Because we're talking about somebody who is blessed not just with a number one bestseller, but everything in his library is a number one bestseller, including his wife, for crying out loud. And this all came to my attention with the first number one bestseller, Chicken Soup for the Soul, 2, 3, 4. And that's so the audience listening right now around the world, this international broadcast, can say, are you kidding? Really? I've read that. I have that right. Wait, and I've got the second book over here. Everybody, I think, has read Chicken Soup for the Soul, and congratulations.
Thank you. We're totally honored, but now tell them the truth about you. My greatest supporter.
Yes, like a supporter that you have in the sports section of the store. I take great pride in reminding everybody that no matter how many hits you might have with guests or successful shows or something like that in broadcasting, it's always good to remember the one you really blew. And with me, there's been more than one. But the biggest disaster, I think, of any prediction that I've ever made is when Rosemary Scarfo, my erstwhile producer of these many, many years, came to me, and we were doing just a radio show at that time, a daily news talk kind of a thing. And she said, listen, the success that they're finding with this book that they called me about, even early on, it just looks like something that's unparalleled. And I said, well, tell me what the name is. Chicken Soup for the Soul. And I said, well, no matter how many they've sold so far, it sounds like a disaster.
I'm wearing a smile ear to ear because my love and respect and appreciation for you and your honesty.
No one will ever hear of this book or maybe even Chicken Soup itself again as long as we live. Now, Rosemary, get me somebody that's going to be successful. I told your co-author, Mr. Canfield, right?
Yep, Jack Canfield, yes, sir.
Two of you did this together. I'm going to ask you how that happened before we start getting into the life of Reverend Ike. But I told him that, and I thought he was going to have a seizure laughing at the whole concept, particularly because of the success you've had. How do you narrow that success down? How many books, Chicken Soup books, have there been? How many have you sold?
We sold somewhere between 500 and 600 million, because when you're doing over 100 million, they only do it at 100 million. On you know, the people that really do this are Guinness Book of Records, and I've got 59 of those, and been number one more than anybody else, because I'm really the seminal writer, and Jack was the most sublime editor. As you know, he was third in his class at Harvard and a genius. I take nothing away from my dear
partner. Did well at Southern Illinois University, though.
Yeah, I was student body president and all that good stuff for 64,000 students, and I think it was the most important school then. I was wearing Saluki everything and was a student leader. They liked me so much they kicked me out and sent me to India for a year to study. They said, we got to get rid of you.
But when the two of you, you and Canfield, sat down somewhere and said, so let's do this book about...
Jack had a silly title for it, but he'd come to my seminar. We both talked to 6,000 people one day at the Mandala Foundation in San Diego. He was kickoff and I was tie up, and I'm signing a lot of books done, and he comes up. And he said, do you know me? I said, yeah, you're Dr. Jack Canfield. You sold 370,000 copies of a book called 101 Ways Build Self-Esteem in Classroom. He said, oh, my God, can I take you to dinner? And we had what we would call a Vulcan mind meld. Immediately, we wanted to be best friends. And then I told him, because I was already writing a book called 1 Minute Millionaire, How to Make a Million a Year, because he was only making 100 grand. put it on the ceiling. His wife, a doctor, said, I don't know why you'd believe Mark Victor Hansen. You put pictures and images of stuff. But we're going to talk about Reverend Ike. Reverend Ike had taught me is, you know, what you visualize, you realize, and what you impress, you express. And I thought, Jack, you're just impressing 100,000 and not doing it right. So let me teach you how to make at least $1 million a year, because that should be a minimum for the talent you got.
And that's parking fees right now for you, the $1 million a year.
Thank you.
Well, we're talking about, though, an empire that is chicken soup for the soul and all of your accountants. Because it's not just a book.
No. One weekend I'm reading both Steven Spielberg's book and George Lucas's book, and they both said they'd made $800 million in E.T., but $1.5 billion in licensing. So I went to Jack, and I said, Jack, we're going into licensing. He said, what do you know? I said, nothing. I said, well, look, when I was a graduate research assistant to the smartest guy on the planet, Einstein's best student, Dr. Buckminster Fuller, he taught me systems theory. And a system is there's inside and outside, and we're outside, but in 1 year I'll read every book, I'll attend every seminar on licensing, I'll meet whoever's the top dog or lady, and turn out to be a lady. Well, we did $1 billion worth of licensing because no one had ever tried it in books. We do chicken soup for the soul dog food. We sold $167 million worth of chicken soup for the soul dog food, and you get 15%. You don't have to package it, wrap it, smell it, take returns. Licensing is the nicest, cleanest business in the planet, and most people that are listening have never heard it, and that's why hopefully they'll come to one of my seminars and listen to me answer any question anyone can ask.
Well, I thought that the nicest, cleanest profession in the world was that of the evangelical minister. He smoothly says, as we talk about the new book, Reverend Ike, which is, number one, we're not even going to pretend humility here, because this is only one of a couple of guests that we have in this hour. How do we pack it all into 60 minutes? Well, Mark Victor Hansen is guest number one here, not necessarily in order of importance, sir.
Correct.
But Reverend Ike, number one in religion.
He had more followers than anybody here and in Africa.
I'm not talking about Reverend. I'm talking about the book.
Oh, the book. Yes.
Pay attention.
Yeah. I'm trying.
Okay, it's number one.
Yep.
In religion.
Yep.
Okay. You have another number one at the same time.
General.
Lacking humility altogether. And this was with the assistance of your wife.
Right. She is beyond brilliant. And we wrote Ask, the bridge from your dream to your destiny. We say you got to ask God, ask others, and ask yourself. Those are the only three channels asking. And other than us, we couldn't find anyone else that ever taught it. Because the Bible is clear, like you know, ask and you shall receive. Knock and the door will be open to you. And, you know, just on and on and on. But no one ever taught how to do it. And so we taught the principles, same we used to get the best title for Chicken Soup for the Soul. We went in our respective minds, Jack and I, and seeing as your wife and mine are both hypnotherapists.
Yes.
We 100 times said, mega best-selling title, mega best-selling title, mega best-selling title. It sprung out. Chicken Soup, and Jack called me and said, I said, for the soul, and we got goosebumps, and 144 publishers all said, hit the road, Jack. And I said, look,
144 publishers
said bye-bye.
And one talk show host
yes, right.
said, hit the road, get out of my life, it'll never happen. And then he says, number one in religion, how do we break into that category, Jack? And he says, why don't you just talk to a couple of other people and see what evangelical figure is our kind of person. Turns out to be the one on the cover. I mean, and it is a very, very good-looking man with a microphone, and from the pulpit, he says, this is Reverend Ike, and the book is subtitled An Extraordinary Life of Influence. But why him? Why him after Chicken Soup for the Soul and the billions and millions and hundreds of billions that arrived in your life as a result of that? Why was this attractive? Why would you bother to do this?
There probably wouldn't have been a Chicken Soup without a Reverend Ike. When I went bankrupt and lost $2 million in one day when the oil embargo hit 1974, and I went bankrupt so fast, I had to check a book at the library, How to Go Bankrupt by Yourself. And, did, you know, I had to reach up to touch bottom. And I was suicidal, but I went to see Reverend Ike in the afternoon and Sunday. He preached from 3 to 5 or 6 every Sunday. And my soul was just wowed because he said, God wants you to be abundant. And Xavier was obviously in the audience all the time, but I came with a little entourage and loved it. And there were like 5,000 people at his United Palace, which was gold gilded, and he had 16 Rolls Royces and mansions. And I thought, he said, look, when he was a poor black kid born in 1935, went through the Depression, went through everything bad, you know, he said, I read that line that the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And he said, you either wholly believe it or you don't. And he said, most people don't believe it. I believe it and achieved it. And I thought, wow, that's not what I grew up with in the Lutheran and the Baptist church. And the guy, I was there for 7 years in a row. I lived in New York and went every Sunday, and he helped make me a really rich guy. And I was a mentee and taught at his Business of Living seminar. And then we became great friends. And ultimately, when I was running a $100 million company on my book, 1 Minute Millionaire, called Enlightened Millionaire Institute, we had 4,000 people a weekend, 40 weekends a year. Tony Robbins and I are the two biggest seminar givers at that time. I'd hire Reverend Ike to come and teach the philosophy of prosperity, money, and what the other thing he was, a supernatural healer, which Xavier will talk about.
But you have had such influences in your life.
Yeah.
Buckminster Fuller, who taught you how to do the geodesic dome.
Correct.
How many people get that kind of a lesson? Reverend Ike from the pulpit. And, oh, yeah, you've mentioned Xavier a couple of times. How about if we introduce him?
Xavier, he's smiling away.
Xavier, it is so good not only to have you on the God Show, but you being the symbol of absolute patience while we sit here and talk to this mogul of moguls. And Xavier, listen, would you please do me a favor, since I've handled Xavier, the pronunciation, fairly well, will you please do what everybody's done in your life, and would you pronounce your last name for me?
Certainly, Pat. It's wonderful to be on with you. And the last name is pronounced Eichenkoder. And I do say Xavier Eichenkoder. But, you know, I get all kinds of permutations of both names, and I appreciate them all.
No, but you prefer Xavier.
I do.
As in Kugat.
There you go.
And you're probably far too young to remember the Latin American band leader, Xavier Cugat.
But no, I'm not. I remember him well.
So now that we're establishing senility here, with all of us reaching that particular juncture in our lifespan, here's a guest that we've been listening to, Mark Victor Hansen, unparalleled, truly unparalleled successes in the publishing world, branding, all of those things, as a result of being in the company of your dad. What was it like, though, being in the shadow of Reverend Ike?
Well, it was pretty amazing experience. You know, my father brought elements of inspiration to so many people. And when I say elements, I mean literal elements of nature expressed in human form. He breathed the breath of life into so many people, and hopefully we'll get a chance to hear him in some of the clips, and inspired them. You know, we talk about inspiration. It is taking in that breath of life. And he was able to take the inspiration from the idea and the actuality of the presence of God within. That is the basis of his philosophy, the basis of his life and his communication to people, the presence of God within. You know, and of course, as it's written, God breathed the breath of life into the human being, and the human being became a living soul. And every time we breathe, we're taking in more life. And every time we let the breath out, we're sending that breath out for greater aspiration of the more that we can be. And my father, standing in a pulpit, you know, 5,000 people every Sunday at the United Palace, 20,000 people at every, meeting and arena around the world, I got to watch him breathe that breath of life. And then the fire, the passion of inspiration, kindling a light within the darkness of the minds and the consciousness of people that he was speaking to. And it was absolutely powerful to witness. And so growing up with that was very personally inspiring to me.
But as you were inspired, as were all of those many thousands of people in that massive congregation, the live congregation, and the electronic technology that brought Reverend Ike to so many people around the world. As they were inspired, they, though, didn't have to be Reverend Ike's kid. And and when I talk to people who are celebrated primarily because of the name of a parent, I want to know who they are and who have you become. And was it difficult during that period of time to become Xavier exclusively and not just Reverend Ike's kid?
Oh, well, I appreciate that, Pat. Thank you for asking. Yes, you know, there are assets and liabilities to being the son of, a great man who inspired so many. You know, on the positive side, it gave me so many resources to be able to explore and develop my own talents, you know, as well. Some of those talents run parallel with my dad. Spiritual communication is also the basis of what I do. But I'm also, for example, a musician. I sing, I write music, I play percussion, I compose music. And that's one of my ways of getting that inspiration into the minds and hearts of people. So I had the ability to develop, for example, my musicality by studying, you know, with some wonderful teachers and having the time and my own little studio at home to explore and spend hours upon hours developing my talent according to my passion and my true interest. Some downsides, you know, with Dad is that, you know, he had it in his mind that I was meant to be mini-me. And I explain this in the book. You know, my destiny, according to him, was to take over his entire operation and be literally Reverend Ike II. Now, that was a tremendous burden to me. And growing up, you know, any boy wants to please his father. So I took that on at a very young age. When I grew up, though, I had to, for the sake of my own individuation and the health and the soul in my of my soul and my own becoming, I had to rebel against that and throw at least some of that off so that I could find myself, my own expression, my own selfhood, my own manhood. So we butted heads over that when I was coming of age, you know, as all adolescents do with their parents. You know, this was, it became our personal epic battle. So my dad was very overbearing and controlling in that way. And also, you know, the aspect of him not being there in the home a lot was difficult for me as well.
Absentee father traveling the world, that's got to be tough.
Yeah, it was. And though I knew he loved me, there was a certain estrangement that set in because, you know, he's not there taking me to my ball games or, you know, even the proverbial throwing the ball around in the backyard or just, you know, a part of my day-to-day life. So, you know, there is some distance there that we had to kind of bridge later in life. And so that was difficult. You know, that there were some painful things, of course, there around the personal aspect.
And as the co-author of the book, Reverend Ike, along with Mark Victor Hansen, you bring a very personal and familial kind of recognition of your father to the readership. For those people, however, who are not familiar with Reverend Ike and who, for whatever reason, just simply didn't cross paths, I'm going to be talking to both of you about who he was and the influence and why he was so enormously successful and why that success also manifested itself in an incredible level of affluence. And did that get in the way of the image of the humble minister in the tiny congregation in Zelman, Utah? we'll find out more about that. By the way, before we get back to Mark, I want to find out a little bit more about Xavier, the musician. Is it a career in liturgical music?
No, it isn't. It is inspirational music in nature because of its content and the context it appears in. It is not liturgical. For me, art is an expression of the soul, and how that art expresses through the individual is a spiritual expression. So all of my music is spiritual for that reason. But I also deal with, specific inspirational content. For example, Shine Another Light is the name of one of my recent songs. And, you know, that's based on the idea of the divinity within every human being, you know, which is, again, the concept that my father's philosophy turns on. So, but the style of my music tends to run through, world music. I am a student of traditional West African drumming, so I put a lot of different cultural textures into my music. It also has a very cinematic scope to it. So it's very much a fusion. It's a fusion.
Is there a musician, a recording artist, living or dead, that tomorrow you would pay all of your profits from the book to see in concert?
I would pay an exorbitant ticket price to see in concert, which they are these days. Some of my favorites, Stevie Wonder, absolutely brilliant. Earth, Wind, and Fire is my favorite band of all times. As a matter of fact, I found out after we wrote this book that my dad knew Maurice White, who's the leader and founder of Earth, Wind, and Fire. Had I known that, believe you me, I would have gotten an introduction and made an entree. But
we should have been doing this interview in September,
right? Because he was just in town, and I could have introduced you. I didn't know that was your love of music.
Well, that was just a smooth transition, September into one of the songs. But you're far too old to even appreciate those kinds of things, Mark. I'm sitting here. what are you doing? Are you
shutting it off?
Are you recording this at the same time?
No, sir. I wouldn't do that.
Oh, because, you just simply put on mute on your phone.
Yep.
So that through...
Nobody can interrupt us.
Through the magic of all that we can do in this business, I don't hit a button and all of a sudden Earth, Wind, and Fire comes up. And all of the music, Stevie Wonder and all of those people who were so influenced in their childhoods by gospel music.
Exactly. Yes. Now, Stevie Wonder, we were just on another show with Dr. Michael Beckwith, and the day before we were on, Stevie Wonder was there. Now, if I'd known that, he could have driven down and been with Stevie that day. But it's going to happen again, Xavier, so your wish will come true.
As long as we're dropping names, how about if we do this one?
Please.
That publishing giant, that legendary figure in the world of business, Mark Victor Hansen. Xavier and I are very familiar with the name. And so what we want to know is how we can familiarize ourselves with the name of the person that brought us all together today, Xavier's dad, Reverend Ike. And for the people right now who are listening in Latvia, and there's every possibility, introduce us to him and how he began.
Okay, well, we'll both have a hit at that. He was born in 1935 in the Carolinas, and not a very good time in history to be born there. Blacks were not respected, not appreciated, not admired. They had separate bathrooms. There was no civil rights yet. They besmirched people of color at the time.
And sometimes lynched them.
Exactly. And Jim Crow and all that, Xavier can talk to with great eloquence and understanding. But this guy had the juice starting at 6 years old, was told that he could preach. His father, who was not an at-home father, was a little bit out preacher and would have young Ike Rinkoder read stories like Romans 6, and he did it with such eloquence and passion in front of a live church audience. Mm. They had it, and then all of a sudden by 14 he becomes a real pastor. And one of the stories we have in there that I think is the prostitute that helps is that he's got everything going wrong in his life, and I won't go through that, but he goes over to this jute joint across the street, and the lady said, "You look like you're down on your luck. What's wrong, boy?" And he said, I want to go to a seminary and I have no money. He tells a story and she goes into her bra, pulls out the money and says, here, I get goosebumps telling the story.
Well, when I read the story, I got goosebumps.
I mean, it just so, I mean, who would think a girl of ill repute, if you don't mind my using that term on this great godly show, would be the one sponsoring him to go to seminary up in New York, where he was also not treated very well.
Every day, then and now, still, there are minorities who go on to higher education, but they don't become Reverend Ike. What was that transition? And I've already found out from Xavier about the father-son relationship, but I want to know from you, as a successful businessman, what is it that happened to him? What did he do that went, this is it, this is the change, this is the metamorphosis?
The metamorphosis is that he believed that God was in us and not in the sky. God's not a God in the clouds with a gray beard and, you know, looking down on us. He said, you know, I don't want God in the sky in the by and by. You know, the whole Bible says that the sweetheart of God is right here and right now, whether you're reading the Old Testament or the New Testament. And you're supposed to wake up to that divinity inside you and then go fulfill your potential. And he decided, I'm going to be a gigantic. He was always called himself an evangelist. He never called himself a minister, so to speak, although certainly he was, and he had a lot of colleagues and all that. And he wowed everybody that ever got in front of him. I would bring in people that were anti, people that were a lot of things. And by the time his 2 or 3 hour service was done, or they're all cheering and saying, I'm going to watch him for the rest of my life.
Now, he was another hypnotherapist. He was a guy who theatrically,
correct,
from that stage, from that altar, from that podium, from that pulpit, mesmerized everybody.
Totally.
But how did he learn to do that, Mark? I mean, you were talking about the 6-year-old and the 14-year-old, obviously gifted children, and there are a lot of gifted children that don't become Reverend Ike. What is it that happened on a temporal business basis that said, oh, boom, that's what did it? Not what he philosophized, but what happened to him.
What he did is he went and watched everybody as anyone, as a healer, as a minister, as anything. He eclectically absorbed that. He was an addicted good reader because at 4 years old, his mother had nobody to babysit, so his mother and grandmother were getting their master's degree, which is really rare back in the prehistoric
yes.
days. And he had to sit there and he listened to all the smartest people ever. And it just woke up his mind at levels very few people do. And his soul. His soul was so enlarged, so enveloping that, like you said, everybody got mesmerized, enchanted, excited. And they got in tune with the infinite because they got in what's called in the biblical way, entrainment. They got entrained to the God in them.
Well, when I was reading the book, the one thing that I continued to find most interesting is it always seemed to me, at least according to the book that you and Xavier wrote, that he always believed that he would be that successful.
Correct.
He didn't seem to ever have any doubts.
As a little kid, he visualized it on the ceiling of the space when his mother would be, metaphorically or literally spanking him just because that was okay in the old days. And he saw himself being a great preacher, having a great home, having a gigantic congregation, having these wonderful cars, and living and dressing flamboyantly and lavishly and extravagantly and, I got to say, beautifully. He was enchanting to watch.
Xavier, did that ever get in the way, that kind of affluence? It does seem to happen to so many kids of those who have come into that kind of wealth and comfort. Sometimes it is not a comfort for them. What about you?
Well, let me first say that you can't separate what my father did philosophically with what he did in business, because it's from the same source that Mark and I have said. It's the belief and understanding of God within the human being. And because my father, at a very young age, took on that belief that God was in him, God was his father, that means he deserved every good thing. So he took that as the through line of his life and harnessed his power of imagination, for example, that you mentioned, that he then shared with millions of people from the pulpit and from television, helping them learn how to visualize and manifest. And because we have God within us, we also have the power of God, of which imagination is one. And when we use those powers, all beautiful things can be added unto us. So money, affluence, wealth, if that's something you choose, you can have it because you are a child of the king, as he would say. So affluence, money, etc., was never a problem for me because I always understood I deserve it because I am divine like every human being, and we can have all of this wonderful good. And anything that we choose that we want for a joyful life, we can have. That's what my father taught everyone. You can have it. You can be, do, have all of the good that you desire by the power of God within you. And so this book, Reverend Ike, An Extraordinary Life of Influence, I call it a success manual on all levels, spiritual, financial, emotional, you name it. Because when you go through the book and you get the story of how my father did what he did, and when you apply these ideas and principles, you can create it for yourself in your own way. And so, yes, he had special talents, but so does every human being. And my father was the first person to encourage you. You have your own talents, just like Christ said, you know, where I am, shall you be also. He expressed it in a unique way and was able to reach the heights that he did through that unique expression, and encouraged everybody that you can do that too in your own way. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean being famous, but it means living your best life. It means living with the richness, the fulfillment of whatever that means for you. If it's raising kids, if it's whatever you choose to do, do it with fulfillment, do it with gusto.
But Jesus wore humble robes, and he rode into Jerusalem on the back of a humble donkey, and it never ever seemed that Jesus is associated with abundance or affluence. I'm not arguing the point with you because I see I relate more to your father, who often dressed like James Brown as opposed to wearing a brown robe. And I relate more to him because I grew up in the theater. So I grew up around theatrical people. And so we always have those generalities in our minds when we're casting somebody as a minister. He's not driving one of several Rolls Royces up to the home with the gigantic gate, because we always associate that career field, if you will, with financial humility. How do you get past that?
Well, my father chose to do it in a different way. And by the way, he always said that, you know, the donkey was the Rolls Royce of Jesus' day. And in fact, how do we know that, you know, the robes Jesus wore were not the Brioni, you know, expensive Italian suits of his day either? See, I don't buy the poor Jesus parallel, because Jesus always had everything that he needed and wanted. As a matter of fact, he multiplied loaves and fishes for everybody. Mm-hmm. So Jesus was an abundant figure, and I don't believe anything different. My father saw it the same way. And here's the thing. In his reasoning, if God is a loving father, he wants me to have all of the good that it's possible to have. And if I choose to have financial abundance, then the Father puts his blessing upon that desire, and I can manifest all that I want. Part of what he transcended by transcending poverty, see, you have to understand the pain that he came out of, the pain and the humiliating pain of poverty when he did not have 7 cents sometimes to buy lunch at school, when he didn't have money to buy new shoes, when he had holes in his shoes and had to walk to, you know, miles to school and miles back every day. It's humiliating. And so his belief was that I can have a greater life than that. Why? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He took that seriously. And so the idea of lack and limitation and devaluation also is part of what was handed down to black people by their white enslavers. And because you are less than a human being, you don't deserve the goodness that other people, you know, of a particular color have.
And when Lady Day wrote about that period of time that your father grew up in, with all those lynchings, talking about the strange fruit that grew from those trees that he knew about and saw sometimes, it is still another remarkable story on top of a remarkable story.
Indeed.
Reverend Ike, an extraordinary life of influence. By the way, I do want to ask Mark Victor Hansen 17 or 18 more deeply moving questions, but I'm terribly sorry, Mark. Xavier is so interesting. No, I'm terribly.
And he's got a great voice. Xavier, he has been complimenting your voice as I sit here and he whispers to me, just because you've got that wonderful Earl Jones type voice.
No, and I'm the one who has spent a career using my voice on the air, and now I feel it's as a result of surgery that I sound this way as compared with Xavier, for crying out loud. I have one question to ask you, Xavier, before I go back to Mark, and I want to have both of you stay with us on the God Show about the book Reverend Ike, Xavier's father. The most abiding question that I can ask you right now in the company of Mark Victor Hansen is, Xavier, did you read Chicken Soup for the Soul?
Of course I did.
I was morally obligated to ask you that.
Yes. What an amazing work, right? I mean, talk about inspiring millions of people, breathing the breath of life and passion and joy. Those volumes have done exactly that.
Well, I'm glad you didn't take my advice then from the beginning to ignore it totally.
When we were interviewing people, they kept saying, you know, I was in the back of the car, one of the Rolls was with a driver with Reverend Ike, and he always had his books in the back folio and one or more copies of your Chicken Soup books. And I thought, wow, that is amazing. I mean, he had me on his infomercials. He had me on a lot of stuff. So I really love this guy, and we got along because we believe in the fundamentals, two fundamentals here that Reverend Ike did. Number one, abundance is for everybody. I teach now that poverty belongs in one place, a museum. Doesn't belong anywhere else. We shouldn't have any poverty. There's more than enough for everybody. Even Mahatma Gandhi, who looked poor but said, there's enough for everyone's need, not enough for everyone's greed. And then number two is that, and we haven't touched on this very deeply yet, is that this guy was a supernatural healer. Back when he started in the Carolinas, people would come in on stretchers with tuberculosis, and he would change their mind and change their life. Today we know it's called molecular healing, because your mindset controls your body set, and your soul set controls your mindset. And he understood these very, I can go very esoteric on this, because he and I alone would talk in very highfalutin language about all this, but the bottom line is, He got rid of people's alcoholism, their cancer, their drugs, all kinds of stuff. And Xavier will tell you that he used to break canes, and we had a little healing section in at the front of United Palace, and people would come in sick, and he would do laying on of hands, and then he'd have the audience rub up their hands and send healing energy to everybody, and they'd walk out well. I saw people come in destitute with rags, and he was always welcoming, because he said to me, I never saw them as sick. I never saw them as poor. I saw the divine self, and the divine self, the true self of everyone. That's why everyone's got to get this book and then go to Rev Ike, RevIkeBook.com. And we're going to give you the free videos and free other stuff, because you buy the book because you need to have it. And the book is going to be a touchstone. It's a screaming value, and it's going to change your life. That's my guarantee. And if it doesn't, you send it back to me personally, just Mark Victor Hansen in Scottsdale, Arizona. I will send back your money. Because Xavier and I are getting gazillion letters, just like I did in Chicken Soup. When Chicken Soup was at its zenith, 5,000 letters a day. It was amazing. But people write and say, this book has changed my mind about poverty, changed my mind about wearing black or gray or a clerical collar. I think you can have an exciting, exquisite, fulfilled life. That Reverend Ike would use a word, you got to have fulfillment to get fulfillment, because you need to have both the thought and the emotion to aggregate whatever it is you want to the good that you desire.
I think most Christians probably would associate the gift of healing in the life of Jesus directly as a result of the fact that, well, who else? He was the Son of God.
Right.
But Reverend Ike was the son of poverty in the South and a black man. Why him? Why was he healing people with tuberculosis?
Great question.
And not you?
By the way, what he said, well, he would quote Jesus, who said, the works I have done, you can do greater works, you've got to work on yourself first before you can help and source out anyone else. You've got to lead yourself before you can lead another. And he was a superstar, eclectically wise, and really, Xavier said he was away from home, seeing as I had that same problem. You know, when Chicken Soup sells 15 million books a year, you know how fast you got to be moving to writing and directing and going on shows and traveling to the next seminar. But Ike did all that, and he did it with fluidity and magnificence and eloquence and elegance. Every audience was just touched. And they went out and got well. They came believing he could heal them. And that's part of the thing. Remember, Jesus couldn't heal in his hometown. He said, in your hometown, you're a nobody. Right? Not the exact words out of the Bible, but pretty close.
Pretty close is as much as you're going to get on the God Show. This is a low-budget production. Xavier.
Yeah.
I would love to have you spontaneously, since we don't rehearse any of this, painfully aware of the audience is, I'm sure, of the lack of preparation. So I'm going to ask you to deliver a very specific message to a very specific person that one ministerial graduate student who is just about to launch a career in the ministry in a small town in Montana, and he has no dream of a Rolls Royce and thinks if he's really lucky, the congregation might be able to kick in with a used car so that he can get to the edge of town to take care of some of the families that can't get to church. Talk to that kind of minister, because he's not relating at all to the life of abundance that you grew up in.
Well, to, you know, hearken back to something you said, Pat, that Jesus was the Son of God. And I would tell this ministerial graduate to remember that he, she, as well, is a son of God, is a daughter of God. And it is that aspect of what my father used to call divine sonship that exists within every human being. And consider the idea that Jesus the Christ was speaking on behalf of you and every human being. That is to say that humanity is the only begotten Son of God. Jesus represented that on behalf of every human being. Now, if you are audacious enough to take on that power, that relationship with God, Father, Source, Almighty, all that is, then that puts you in the position to be able to have everything that you need to manifest the support that will be necessary for your mission. God will provide. When we believe in God, when we believe in ourselves, when we believe in God within ourselves, then all of the means will be there. The Creator of the universe who generated all that is within you. The living spirit of God is animating you in this moment. Do not shortchange that power. Do not discount or set aside the fact that you are given life with every breath. And with every breath comes the opportunity. All things are possible to him who believes.
I can't believe how much more eloquent that could be if you'd had time to prepare. I mean,
that's beautifully done, Zee.
For crying out loud. Wow. By the way, that kind of eloquence is prominent in the book, Reverend Ike, An Extraordinary Life of Influence, by Xavier and by Mark. Mark's name, of course, I can pronounce instantly and without a great deal of fear. Your last name, Xavier, looks as if it's Dutch.
It is, and it means something like acorn carrier. My dad used to say, it proves mighty oaks from little acorns grow.
Interesting, as will the answer to my next question be from Mark Victor Hansen, who also has no idea what I'm asking and probably wishes that I didn't ask him this. Compare Reverend Ike with three other extraordinary familiar and inspiring and influential figures in the evangelical world, starting with Pat Robertson. How different is Reverend Ike and his success than Pat Robertson, the televangelist that everybody knows?
Yeah, I've been on Pat's show, and Pat's a really nice guy, but Pat's quietly humble and an attorney. Reverend Ike was extraordinary, flamboyant. He would come into the studio, the church, as it were, which was a total TV thing, which you can see on YouTube, of course, but he would come in and he would give air hugs to 5,000 people because, and he had to have bodyguards because these people wanted to touch him because they literally thought, if I touch him with the garment, I got it. The audience is down in the Carolinas also for Pat. Robertson, you know, you're not going to get close to. He's got bodyguards multifold in front of him. Now, I obviously got on the show with him, but most people are never going to get close. Reverend Ike, close up, loved everybody and enjoyed everybody and was much more convivial and good after the show. You know, gladly stay, sign books, shake hands, be with everybody, and even invite people out to meals. I don't get that would have happened with that televangelist.
Pat Robertson, a number of years ago, did guest on The God Show, and the closest I came to the next personality that I want to ask you about is his biographer, one of them. But I never met Billy Graham. Did you?
Oh, yes. So I'm living in Newport Beach at the time, and I'm at John Wayne Airport before it became a giant John Wayne Airport that's now a $2 billion airport, and we had a little Delaney's restaurant, which the woman cooked great meals, and you'd go in there and eat before you left because airline food sucks, as you know very well. And the airport gets shut down, and I say to the lady, what happened? And she says, Billy Graham's coming in. I knew he was talking at the Anaheim Convention Center, and he'll be here, and there's a death threat on him, so nobody can see him. So I watch. I'm in the picture window up there, and he gets off, and you know, I've watched him because I love televangelism. I love the ministry, and if I hadn't been a professional motivational speaker, I would have been a great minister and an evangelist like Ike, I'm sure. Anyhow, he walks off, and I just know it's him, and he's got no bodyguards with him or anything, and he's got newspapers under his arm. Goes out to junk cars, because I lived in the city that had the most Rolls Royces in America, and I had one, of course, but it astounded me that 19 bodyguards all leave him to go grab his bags, and they're putting him in a humble car so nobody goes after him. And so I walk up to him and say, Billy, how are you? Because he doesn't know who he knows. He knows a million people. We spent a half hour just having the greatest time ever. And I said, why are you here a week early? He said, look, Mark, you and I are friends, which wasn't true. This is the first time I ever met Dr. Graham and had total respect for him. And was going to the convention. He said, I got to do 12 shows a day to fill the place. I promise you, Reverend Ike never had to do 12 shows. He filled it at the minister out there. For me was Dr. Robert Schuller and a very close friend. And I don't know how that could happen. It's off. Anyhow, it was beyond amazing to me to be with Billy Graham and ask these questions. And he said, look, you're a salesman, I'm a salesman, you got to keep selling your stuff. But Reverend Ike was so popular, so profound, so tantalizing to people to get to see him that I don't think he ever did all the, he did all the media. He was on everybody's show, Oprah's show, you know, people that don't know Larry King and stuff like that. He was on every show, but he would never do 12 little churches to fill up the Anaheim Convention Center.
And then there is that massive center that Joel Osteen fills up every Sunday and sometimes on holidays because he owns the arena and made it a church. And Joel Osteen is right up there with Pat Robertson.
Well, he's a close friend, so I, you know.
Well, he's also been a guest on the program and a fascinating young man.
He on Wednesday writes his sermon, goes over it on Thursday, Friday, memorizes it, Saturday takes off, Sunday does, you know, he has whatever it is, 40,000 people there and 10 million people watching him, and the house is always packed. And Billy Graham said to Joel Osteen once, you know, I would like to come to your show if you can get me a seat. He said, don't worry, I will get you a seat, I promise.
Wow. Well, and he's also that accessible.
Totally. I mean, when he came here to Arizona, you know, Sarah O'Mara, who you know very well with Child Help, and Yvonne Feddersen said, look, you're his friend. Can you get us tickets? I said, I'll get you tickets. Tell me how many people you want. And we had front row tickets. We all got backstage with Joel, took pictures with us. And just Joel is and Victoria are just beyond wonderful, beyond accommodating. And he is in the same zone of a positive minister as Shuler and my friend Peel and Ike. All of these guys are teaching the positivity of God, and Ike would say, look, the cross means you cross out negativity, because, you know, the Bible only has 365 times two words, and they are fear not, right? Mm. And what Reverend Ike wanted you to do is conquer your fears, overcome them, so you can be a full-time achiever, and that's why, you know, he had me on the stage a lot and said, here's what, you know, my dear friend Mark Victor Hansen has pulled off, and Mark, will you talk about this or that, just like the interview we're doing right now, and the audience has just went crazy, and obviously there or at Shuler's, I'd sell a lot of books.
But not everybody spreading the word of God according to the individual person is doing so with that kind of positivity or with that kind of positive influence. Caution people right now about who it is that they might look out for. The personality that may be flamboyant, may be attractive, may be extremely good-looking, like Reverend Ike, but doesn't have everyone's interests in mind.
That's correct. That's exactly why Jesus said, look, there are four types of people. There's the shepherd, the sheep, the wolf, and then there's the sheep wearing wolf's clothing. And some of them are in the ministerial business because they're a con person, male or female. And there are a lot of them nowadays, unfortunately. And that's too bad. That's why you got to make sure whoever sources you spiritually does it with honesty, integrity, and savoir faire, and a little bit of panache, because why not have the best of the best available to you?
Robin, my erstwhile studio director, do we have Reverend Ike handy? Do you have something? No, Reverend Ike, not Xavier, who was all okay, because I was going to say the best possible way to close this out would be with a message from Reverend Ike. But to tell you the truth, you can get whatever message you need that is as accessible as the computer or the book, Reverend Ike, An Extraordinary Life of Influence. Xavier, the last minute is yours. And again, surprise, we don't rehearse these things.
Thank you, Pat. It's been wonderful being on with you. And I just would like to encourage everyone listening to get the book, delve into it, read it, because there is true inspiration in there. My father's telecast used to be called The Joy of Living. And if I go back to this idea of elements of inspiration, you know, that brings the water into it. What inspiration does, and the type of inspiration that my father brought, brings up the bubbling depths of the soul into the conscious mind. And that inspiration is a buoyant, effervescent energy that gives us the power and strength to move into life and do the good that we want to do in the world, to be the good we want to be in the world. And when you read the book and you work with it, as I said, it will give you the lessons. It's a success manual for you. And it's going to be a wonderful read. And it will also, to go to the fourth element, the earth will help ground your authority as a child of God, ground you in your choice to be who you're meant to be, everything that God wants you to be. We're created in the image and likeness of God. That means God sees us like themselves.
And you've been spending this time on The God Show with Mark and Xavier and Ike, and I'm Pat McMahon.